This is the Trinitonian Podcast.
This is
your source for a weekly roundup of campus news, events, insights, perspectives, and more.
This is
the Trinitonian.
The Trinitonian.
The Trinitonian Podcast.
This is the Trinitonian Podcast.
For the week of August 27th, this is the Trinitonian Podcast. I'm your host, Dominic Anthony. Classes are in session and new student orientation just came to a close. Contributor Noel Barrera has a recap of NSO's annual triage presentation.
Trinity's annual triage presentation, which took place last Sunday, aimed to inform first-year students about the serious topics of drug use and safe drinking policies, sexual assault and consent, active shooter protocol, and mental health issues in a compassionate and even sometimes humorous way. One of triage's focuses was Trinity's drinking policy, which is unique compared to other universities because it focuses on student responsibility and staying within the optimal buzz over just strictly enforcing drinking laws. The university's overall conduct policy is similarly value-based. Respect others, respect the community, and respect property, both yours and others. Triage's main message was really that the Trinity community cares about you, and if students are struggling with anything, whether it's drug use, a party situation that goes wrong, a mental health issue, or just a difficult transition to college and feeling alone, there is a whole network of people just waiting for you to reach out.
Next up, a piece from contributor Evan Brown about first-year star volleyball player Emma Funk.
I decided to write about first-year volleyball player Emma Funk. She's from Bay St. Louis, Missouri. What impressed me about her was that she was named the 2016-17 Missouri Gatorade Player of the Year, which is an extremely competitive award given to the top volleyball player in the state. I thought, why the heck is she coming to Trinity of all places? But what I found is that she was under-recruited as a volleyball player because of her height. Her high school volleyball coach basically ran every single play through her because she was the most experienced player on the team. She had dominant statistical performances, yet she still had no offers. Eventually, she began looking at colleges, but none fit her requirements of being both an academic powerhouse and having a strong volleyball program. Luckily, one of her club volleyball teammates told her about Trinity. Emma said that once she got on campus, she knew that she had found her dream school. Now she gets to play under a great legendary volleyball coach with Julie Jenkins. She will get to study business at an academically strong school, and Trinity gained not only a great volleyball player, but a heck of a person.
The Trinity volleyball team's first match is this Friday against Cabrini at 3 p.m. Next up, Trinitonian Editor-in-Chief Julia Weiss with a summary of this week's editorial.
In this week's editorial, I read about how we want to encourage our readers to engage with us and take advantage of campus journalism. We offer a really unique platform where the community can read and respond to content they think is exciting or something that makes them angry. I also went over the Trinitonian's grievance policy, which includes the following four steps. Write a letter to the editor, write to the advisor, present to the Board of Campus Publications, and have a discussion with the board. You can follow these steps if there's something you wish to respond to in the Trinitonian.
In other news, the suspended Trinitier fraternity is set to return to campus for the first time since 2015. The Trinitiers have a long history of probation, initially suspended in 1991 following the death of a new active, and again in 2006, later to be reinstated in 2013. They were again suspended in 2015 after failing to follow requirements for rechartering set in 2013. The Board of Alumni will lead recruitment for a new pledge class. And in other news, falling rubble halted the annual first-year tower climb. There were no injuries, and the tradition will be rescheduled when the tower is cleared as safe. On this week's podcast exclusive segment, I chat with Dr. David Pooley, Associate Professor of Physics and Astronomy, about his research and interaction with Trinity's physics students. First, could you just talk about the research you do and how you involve undergraduate students in that research?
I am primarily a high-energy astrophysicist, which means I focus in a particular range of the electromagnetic spectrum in the high-energy range in X-rays and some gamma rays. And so I study very extreme and energetic phenomena like supermassive black holes and supernova explosions and exotic sources and dense star clusters. And my interests are pretty broad, which I think is actually a bit unique and unusual. And I think it helps a lot in giving potential research students a lot of choices for things that might interest them that they could work with me on.
What was it like moving from MIT and doing research there, especially getting your PhD there, and coming to Trinity, where a lot of the research assistants are undergraduate students because we don't have a graduate program in physics?
Well, I was an undergrad at MIT, and I was also a grad student at MIT. And then after that, I got a NASA fellowship that I could take anywhere for a postdoc. And I went to UC Berkeley for that.
Mm.
And then after that, I spent a year at UW-Madison in Wisconsin. And then I came down to Texas and was in Texas for a few years, kind of supporting myself off of grants. Before I got on the faculty at another institution in Texas. And then when the job at Trinity came open, I was really excited about that and glad that I got it. So I've had a lot of experience in different settings. And I can say that I really love working with undergraduates because it's just something really impressive about taking a full undergraduate course load, learning all of this stuff, like being exposed to physics for the first time and still like being able to do research on top of that, I just find very impressive and fun. And, you know, I get to expose my research students to so many different parts of astrophysics and astronomy that are just fascinating and interesting. So I think there's nothing better than working with talented undergrads, which, you know, Trinity has no shortage of. So it's really like the ideal kind of situation for me.
Can you talk about some of the past research you've done, maybe your favorite project you worked on, and then what you're researching right now?
Most of my data, I should say, comes from the Chandra X-ray Observatory, which is like the X-ray equivalent of the Hubble Space Telescope. They're both part of NASA's Great Observatory Program. So these are the premier satellites in the world. And I've been very successful at getting Chandra observations approved through a peer-reviewed time allocation committee. It's hard to pick a favorite topic of research because I think they're all really fascinating. So I would be hard-pressed to choose. I think one of the most exciting things that I worked on recently was the aftermath of the merger of two neutron stars. This is an event that's only been seen once. It was seen last year, almost a year ago, I guess is when it was announced. And it was detected via gravitational radiation. And that's really exciting because this is a very new area of astronomy and astrophysics. And what was exciting about this event is that there were electromagnetic signals as well. In addition to the gravitational radiation, there was electromagnetic radiation. And so that let us actually, you know, use the tools of traditional astronomy, the Hubble Space Telescope, the Chandra X-ray Observatory, the very large array and the radio, and really understand this event. And the entire astronomical community got caught up in this. It was by far one of the most exciting things that's happened in a very long time. And so my colleagues and I were reading a lot of the results. I wasn't directly involved in a lot of the early results, but it was just fascinating to read about them. And one thing that we noticed was that a lot of the papers, like none of the papers, I should say, were talking about what the end result of this merger of two neutron stars was. And we thought that was the most interesting question. There's two possibilities. Either it made a heavier neutron star, or it made a very small black hole. It'd be the smallest known black hole. Or the heaviest known neutron star, and nobody was really addressing that. Mm. And we realized that we could actually make a statement about that. So we requested additional observations with the Chandra X-ray Observatory, which were granted by the director. There's kind of special, necessary observations that arise from a certain opportunity. And so we got those, and in analyzing those data and comparing it to what was seen in other wave bands, in particular the radio, we were able to, say with a fair degree of certainty that it likely did not make a neutron star. There would have been detectable signatures if it had left behind a heavy neutron star, which we really just didn't see. And so it almost certainly made this black hole, which would be the smallest known black hole. Right? And so we got to actually, you know, make that statement and put out that result, which we thought was very exciting. And some other people agreed because NASA put out a press release on it, which is always a lot of fun. And it was picked up by a lot of news outlets all over the world. I saw stories in Italian and Russian and German. So that was pretty cool. And I think the highest profile places that it got picked up were in Forbes and Newsweek.
Wow.
So, yeah, so that was pretty cool.
Cool. And circling back to the initial observation of, I guess, this phenomena, it was initially detected by LIGO, which Dr. Ugolini in the physics department also works with. And just a quick side note about LIGO and what it is. LIGO stands for Laser Interferometer Gravitational Wave Observatory. Basically, LIGO uses a very sensitive combination of lasers, mirrors, and 4-kilometer-long tunnels to measure really, really tiny changes in the fabric of our universe caused by gravitational waves. Gravitational waves were predicted by Einstein in 1916 as an extension of his general theory of relativity, and slightly over a century later, three of the lead scientists on the LIGO project shared the 2017 Nobel Prize in Physics for the first ever observation of gravitational waves caused by the collision of two black holes over a billion light years away. What's it like working in such a small but prestigious, very accomplished physics department?
I mean, I don't have enough good things to say about my department. It's such a wonderful place to be. Dennis's work with LIGO has been, you know, crucial in helping to get the LIGO sensitivity to where it needed to be to detect events like this. And all of my colleagues are, you know, so smart and fun to talk with. I mean, we all work on very, very different things. And so it's just a really nice environment to, you know, be exposed to a lot of different areas of physics. In a bigger place, I would actually have less contact with different kinds of physics because you tend to isolate yourself, you know, in the astronomy group or in the condensed matter group or something like that. Whereas here, you know, we're a small department, so we are, you know, all together and doing very different things. I love being at a liberal arts university. I love that students have such varied interests. I think that it's important to teach, you know, liberal arts students and to show them what cutting edge, you know, physics and astronomy research looks like so that they can appreciate that and they understand the value of that, you know, as part of a larger human endeavor to understand the world.
Cool. And then speaking of an ongoing project at Trinity that you're working on, there is, some students might not know about this, a 16-inch telescope on top of the Mars McLean building, which houses the physics department. You're currently working on refurbishing it a little bit. Can you talk about that work and what you hope to do with it going forward?
I hope to eventually roboticize the telescope, make it completely computer-controlled, so that no human intervention is needed, so that you can just tell it, you know, give it a list of targets to look at over the night, and it would open the dome and point to those targets, collect the data, and then it would just be, you know, sitting there waiting for me in the morning when I got to campus. There's been a little delay in that because some members of the department wanted the telescope to be more available for public observations and things like that. So that project is kind of on hold for now, unfortunately.
With regards to your research going forward, what project are you working on right now, and what projects do you have planned?
Well, I'm continuing to work in all of the areas that I mentioned. I have 5 research students right now, and I'm about to take on probably another 2 in the spring. I'm actually not on campus this fall. I'm on family leave because we're expecting our 3rd child.
Oh, congratulations.
Oh, thank you. So all of my students are working on different projects. And so it keeps me on my toes to mentor them all. But they're all so talented that it's, you know, just a real joy to work with them. And I would say the only other, part of my non-class time that I've been spending a lot of effort on is I'm part of a small team that was picked by NASA to develop a concept for the next generation X-ray observatory. We do, in our field, we do these assessments of all of U.S. astronomy and astrophysics every 10 years are called the decadal surveys. For like what NASA is going to do for the next decade.
Wow.
And NASA wanted to look at four like large flagship class missions to see, you know, what was viable, what was interesting to do. And I was selected to be on the team of about 15 scientists and engineers and, you know, real leaders in the field to develop the science case and the technical case for the next generation X-ray observatory. So that was a really big honor. And I was also especially proud because I'm the only one at a primarily undergraduate institution on the team.
That's it for this week's edition of the Trinitonian Podcast. The Trinitonian Podcast is recorded at the studios of Trinity University's KRTU 91.7 FM, San Antonio's home for jazz by day and indie by night, and produced by me, Dominic Anthony. Our intro music is ELAC, written by San Antonio-based project Vana, and our outro music is Vacation, written by San Antonio-based project Elna.